welcome to this edition of The Upgrade. I'm your host, Peter Bittner. Today with me is John Biggs, co-founder of the Media Copilot. Thanks so much for joining me, John. How are you doing today?
Howdy, howdy.
I appreciate you being here. Tell me a little bit about the Media Copilot and what you guys are working on.
Sure. My co-founder, Pete, and I, we've been working on essentially giving the tools of generative AI to marketers, journalists, and PR people. So one of the biggest issues that I'm seeing right now is that, first off, PR people and journalists and marketers are scared of this stuff, right? So it's historically their bread and butter has been trying to convince humans to do stuff. And if you can teach a robot how to convince somebody to do stuff, to spread misinformation or to advertise and target us in ways that are almost insidious, then you're going to lose a lot of jobs. You're going to lose a lot of humans in the mix. And I think humans are vital to journalism and to media. And to lose that is going to damage the industry in a way that might not be reversible. So our goal is essentially to help newsrooms and help PR folks and help marketers and help writers traverse this really weird terrain and understand what the hell's going on.
Tell me a little bit about how you guys do that. I know you have a few different offerings in addition to the fantastic newsletter that I've been reading for months now.
We also have a consulting arm where we're building out tools for PR professionals. One guy we're talking to needs a research bot. Essentially, what you would use to hire an intern to do or use to hire a researcher to do can feasibly be done with generative AI. It's not as good as a researcher and it's not as savvy as a researcher yet, but I mean, we're headed that way. So our goal is to consult, to build out tools, targeting tools, writing tools. I wrote a tool called sublimewire.com that essentially lets you rewrite press releases into blog posts. That's what I used to do at Gizmodo in the aggregation days. I used to write 28 posts a day.
Wow.
And now I can have the robot write 28 posts a day.
So you're turning your former robot self into an actual robot now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, in terms of aggregation, that wasn't a job for a human anyway. That was the only way you could get traffic. And I think that's still the case. But table stakes is to get a lot of posts on the site. Back then, it was 28 posts a day written by one kid in a basement. And now it's 28 posts a day written by a robot. So anyway, SublimeWire lets you do that. You can basically pick out stories. You can rewrite stories instantly. And you can post them up to a WordPress site.
That's really cool.
Yeah. The mission there is just to make it super easy.
Where can people find SublimeWire and how does that work, you know, in terms of what you guys do business-wise?
Yeah, you can sign up. It's sublimewire.com. You can join the waiting list. We have a beta open. If you're really, really into it, just let me know, john@biggs.cc, and we can get you into the beta. But otherwise, it's a tool that I built myself just to scratch an itch, and then we essentially commercialized it.
That's very cool. What have you been building it on or with?
So I went to Carnegie Mellon for information systems, so I'm kind of like a double threat, I guess. So I'm a bad journalist and a bad IT guy. So I can do both things, but I can't do them well. I use Laravel to code the front end of the app, and then I usually use the API, GPT-4 API, to do all the other good stuff.
Very cool. I encourage everyone to go kick the tires, join the wait list on SublimeWire. And if you haven't subscribed yet to the Media Copilot, you're missing out. What are you guys, you know, most excited about for both the Media Copilot first and then for AI and media?
AI, like tools like mine, are going to change the way journalism is performed. And also a lot of the associated rules, quote unquote, involved in being a journalist have changed drastically. So a lot of the ethical considerations that we used to have back in like the 2000s, when you're like not supposed to take ad money and write about the product or that kind of thing, you couldn't be a salesperson and a journalist, that's kind of gone out the window. Because I mean, look, if you want to make a lot of money, you got to sell yourself, you got to sell your product, and potentially you got to sell paid posts and all this other junk. The business model is broken. Now, my view is that the fire hose of content that's blasting out constantly can be replaced with AI. And humans don't need to sit there and write that, I don't know, George Clooney fell down in a tweet. But I think a lot of people are scared. They don't want to press that button because once you press that button, you lose another 15 people in your newsroom. And it's super sad and it's super scary. That said, there's always a story that I always recall when I'm thinking about these big disruptions. One of the largest industries in most port cities was longshore. Yeah, these massive ships would come in and everything was in boxes. So if you got in bananas, the bananas were in like on a big pallet and you had to carry the bananas by hand onto the shore, and it took weeks to unload a big ship. And at one point somebody decided, hey, what if we put everything into big crates and we could attach the crates to trucks and the trucks can drive them up and down the coast. So they invented the shipping container. And I forget what year this was. Trying to look up the history.
So are you asking ChatGPT or Google now?
No. Still Google.
Still Google. Okay.
Yeah. So 1956. So up until 1956, on the waterfront, you had guys like with no shirts on dragging leather out of the holds of these ships. And then 1956, all of a sudden, longshoremen were completely decimated. And those folks lost their jobs, but they got other jobs. They got crane operator jobs, or they got manufacturing jobs, or they got logistics jobs. So as it stands right now, the longshore version of journalism could go away overnight. I don't know what the shipping crate of journalism is, but it's not going to be something similar to what we're familiar with.
So it sounds like you're not very excited about this AI revolution. Then that was the original question.
Look, I am. I'm definitely not a pessimist, nor am I cynical. I'm trying to be a realist about this. And anybody who isn't a realist about this is going to lose their shirt. The AI revolution is very exciting, but it's also extremely dangerous in times of disruption like this one, while lots of people get broken. And it's super dangerous and it's super scary. And hopefully we can get through it okay, but we'll see.
In this sort of new information landscape, let's take the longshoreman analogy. What do you anticipate being some of the job functions that will be most easily replicated by AI? And what are some of the areas which are more difficult to replace a human in?
Like editing of content is going to be key. I mean, there are obviously a few tools that edit for you, and they can make sure that you're grammatically correct. But the stuff that comes out of ChatGPT, for example, is not writing. It's basically typing. It doesn't have a lot of energy. So I see a situation where the journalist becomes the editor for a team of robots. Robots spit out the content. The journalist edits it, gives it some life, and then moves it on to the next thing, because it's already proofread, and it'll be proofread again by robots. So you kind of lose copy editors, that kind of thing. Now, the thing that I'm scared about is that we give that job to the reporter job to robots, then the editors forget how to report. And again, are we worried that longshoremen are going to forget how to pull a big stack of leather out of a wooden ship? Probably not. It doesn't really matter. Maybe that's the same case here. Maybe the idea of reporting is not as vital anymore. But then again, you have to teach the robot what to look at, what to understand. And the question is, how do you teach a robot to report on a school board meeting, that kind of thing? So there's two ways to think about it. Humans are still vital in the chain, in almost every chain. There are going to be places where they're getting knocked out, but there could be entry-level positions and higher-level positions that bookend the AI controls.
So the job of reporting, let's take the school board meeting example, right? If those meeting notes are publicly available or the recordings are available now, we already have, you know, a variety of very sophisticated tools that can basically summarize everything that was said, potentially analyze it, categorize it, draft an article from it. What's the role of the human in reporting in that sort of scenario?
In a normal meeting, when it's, let's vote if we should give the gym a new roof, a robot could do that easily. But the nuance associated with that roof, who is fighting against it, who is fighting for it, we could also argue that at some point that decision isn't made by humans anymore, it's made by the robot. And the robot says, here are five things that need to be done. They need to be done now because the roof's going to cave in. Here's how much they're going to cost. And all the people have to do is just vote yes or no. And in the vast majority of cases, I think you're going to get a better assessment of priorities for a school board, for a city planning commission, that kind of thing, than a human would offer. So that being said, there's going to be a situation where, I don't know, somebody doesn't want a book in schools because they think it's irreligious or something like that. That kind of conversation becomes interesting news for a human. It's definitely not interesting news for a robot. The robot doesn't care. The robot barely understands what religion is.
I mean, it doesn't understand at all, right? In theory.
Yeah. If we're going to argue like from a Turing standpoint, it can give the perception of understanding. And is the perception of understanding sufficient? Like, I'm talking to you. I don't know if you're a robot or not. And for all intents and purposes, you could be at this point. And your answers are fairly short because I'm the one talking, so you're not talking. So who the hell knows at this point? So,
yeah, that's pretty scary, but true. I could be passing the Turing test as an AI version.
As an interviewer. So from a purely philosophical standpoint, we can't say that the thing doesn't understand because it understands us speaking to it and it can produce sufficient answers that have some uncanny valley effect to them, but are sufficient to purpose in most cases. So that being said, the robot doesn't know that Frank doesn't like Melinda in the school board meeting. And this is why this happened, all this other stuff. Maybe it'll get into the corpus somehow. I doubt that's going to be the case. So you always need that human who's going to be like, well, you know why they did this? It was because this guy, I don't know, has azalea bushes on this lady's lawn and they're angry at each other for some reason. That never goes into a news story, but it kind of colors the news to a degree. And also, if you're going to argue that the AI can write that story, it takes out a lot of the polarization of news and it's just the facts, which is boring and which people don't want to read, which is another problem about media, but let's not go there.
Hey there, are you enjoying this episode? If so, you might be interested in my live online training courses and consulting services. Visit theupgrade.ai to learn more. I'd love to help you and your organization get up to speed on AI. I want to visit some of sort of the larger impacts of this in terms of economically on business models of publications, right, of any type. I loved your recent post looking at the 2005 sort of Google Books case. And just to summarize that for listeners, that was basically the moment in which Google was digitizing millions of copies of real physical books, putting them online, allowing people to access like specific snippets of them for free, essentially. And there was a case, right, a very big one where they basically reached a settlement with a number of authors' guilds and organizations to pay for that, right? And we're at a similar inflection point when it comes to, you know, AI and similar questions. And I love that example because it seems to be a harbinger and at least something to refer back to and realize we have been through this before, right?
So that situation was interesting in that that was the beginning of digitization. So they actually had machines that would like cut the spines off books and they'd start sucking the stuff in. And when I was doing research for a book, it was amazing. You could just basically do a search and just find the thing. And maybe you could go buy the book or whatever. So my biggest problem with the story is that the Authors Guild has done so little to keep up with the times. And all this stuff is sort of self-defeating. Just arguing and getting the settlement or whatever. It's always been like, just don't change anything. I think there was a study like just recently that the average novelist or the average like book writer, somebody who writes books, makes like $2,000 a year off their books maximum. Have they helped authors in that situation? No, they haven't. And maybe AI is going to help that author in that situation because they can write more faster. And maybe that's the trick. But then going back, what happened there is that writers pushed back and they got a settlement. But everything kept on going the way it kept on going. Google kind of put some safeguards on it. You can't like download the whole book anymore. But what that actually did is it destroyed the publishing industry. 2005 to 2008, it was just a complete contraction. Bookstores started dying. You didn't really need a bookstore anymore because you go online and find all that stuff. And it's kind of like the Streisand effect. You're being mean to us and then you kind of ignore the real enemy around the corner who's essentially gutting you. And to ignore that is just really silly.
Wonder if you can just speak to that a little bit in the analogy of what's going on, for example, in the New York Times versus OpenAI.
So we're in the same situation with New York Times. New York Times says that, okay, I can put in some information and I can get a New York Times article out of ChatGPT. That's true, I guess. I mean, I could put in some information and I could get a Muppet movie script as well, but it's not like I'm going to rewrite the Muppet movie or have it. There's no value to it. And plus, the idea that the New York Times is inside the corpus is kind of New York Times' own damn fault because they made it open to search engines. So they want the SEO, they want the traffic, they want the eyeballs, but they don't want to be in this corpus. And you're arguing points that don't really matter. Now, why don't people start building tools to help journalists make sure that they still make money as soon as they get cited or as soon as they get sucked into the corpus? Why isn't that happening? I'm actually working on something like that, but the fact is it's going to be super hard to do any uptake because journalists don't care and their organizations don't care even more. So you're in this realm where everybody's going to argue about the stupidest stuff and they're not going to notice the freight train coming down the track right at them while they're arguing about the two beetles sitting on the rail. And I think that's exactly where we're headed with this new argument.
What's your prediction in terms of the way that this may shake out? We've seen, you know, Axel Springer, for example, partner directly with OpenAI. We don't know what those details are, but these are two different tactics to try to get paid for essentially AI scraping this proprietary data, right? Are you a proponent of one versus the other in terms of, you know, advocating for media organizations, or do you think that there's another tack that hasn't been explored?
I think media organizations and PR organizations and everybody, they have to rethink the way they make money. We need, to a degree, some control over what we write, where it ends up, that sort of thing, because the coal in this oven of generative AI is other people's writing, because the AI can't write for itself because it's just going to be a copy of a copy of a copy. That's a little bit extreme, but I think that's accurate assessment. So just like there's a way for ASCAP to charge for song plays, there should be a way for like me to get 2 cents every time AI reads my thing and uses it in an answer. So the fact is that they have to work with OpenAI and they have to rethink their business model. And consumers have to start paying for this stuff. I mean, Twitter is garbage right now and Facebook is garbage right now because the stuff that's on there is free. And when stuff is free, it's advertisement. They're trying to sell something to you. The free news weeklies that used to be in major cities, they were great. They were alternative papers. They were primarily a vehicle for advertising, I don't know, vape shops, or no, hookah shops and waterbed stores in the town. That was basically why they existed. And there was a certain amount of autonomy associated with that. And journalists figured out how to route around the damage associated with being a paper designed just for ad sales. But we're in a situation now where it's come to a head and we can't do it anymore. It's just impossible. So yeah, what does the world look like in 20 years? I think we have robot writers, we have robot editors, and we have human editors who are helping them. It's like a centaur situation where the human is on the head and the legs are the AI. And we have new models for journalism where people are actually paying for journalism. Now, does this reduce misinformation? I think it does, because you're not going to pay for garbage. You might pay for echo chamber kind of stuff, which is problematic, but I mean, you're already getting echo chamber stuff anyway. And I think journalists have to fight for control of their product, and PR people have to fight for control of their industry, and marketers have to fight, and writers have to fight, just not like the way they're doing it right now, which is kind of petty.
How do they have to fight? Like, who are they fighting, I guess, specifically?
Yeah, I think they're fighting OpenAI, they're fighting Google, they're fighting Amazon. They're fighting to have their stuff taken out of the corpus or else. I mean, fine, absolutely fine, put 1 million public domain books in there, but then you have a AI that just like writes like Lady Chatterley's Lover, and it's not a big deal. It's nothing special. The real humanity associated with all this AI stuff, the stuff that gives you chills when you read it, when it comes out of these stupid things, was written by a human. We all know that. And OpenAI knows it too. They didn't make a product that does anything. They made a product that ingests and regurgitates.
Well said. What do you think is one of the most overhyped or underhyped aspects of generative AI?
I think some of the underhyped stuff, it's the ability to equalize everything, right? So I'm somebody in a country where I don't really speak English well, but I have an idea that I want to write about. So I can ask the AI to write a couple paragraphs for me. I can ask it to do an outline for me. It gives me the ability to speak the lingua franca of English really well and easily in a way that I didn't have before. So if I can write a research paper a little bit better now, I can learn how to do something even better using this tool. The same goes for art. The same thing goes for film. If I want to be a creative person and I don't have the skill or even the tools, I don't have a camera, right? So I say, okay, well, make me this crazy guy with a sword and he's going to be my character in my book. You really kind of like open the possibility of creativity. And the quality goes up immensely. I think the way media has always worked is that you're a little kid and you want to write something and you don't like how it's written and you get better and you get better and you get better. Now, the bar of not liking what is written used to be, I only have crayons and this piece of paper, so I can't make something amazing. Now, I have Dolly and I can say, make me a goat that flies, and I've got a goat that flies instantly. Is it a great goat that flies? No. Is it useful to me and useful to my imagination? I think it's 100%. Same way as a generative AI in terms of writing. So yeah, it creates an equality in terms of the imagination. And it gives people tools to build stuff that is amazing. And where the level of amazing used to be, okay, I got to sit at a drafting table for 15 hours. Now it takes 5 seconds. And what people will do with that tool that takes 5 seconds is they will create something that takes 15 hours, obviously, because the human mind wants to expand and build on ideas. So we're going to have some really, really amazing stuff come out because it's going to be augmented. If a kid can do amazing stuff at age 5, just think what they can do at age 40.
That's a good analogy as well. So tell me a little bit about what some of the most important skills are for professional communicators to develop in the realm of AI. I know you guys are also running some great trainings and consulting. Like, what are you telling your students or your clients regarding some of the most critical things to get up to speed on?
Well, the first thing is you got to try it. You got to use it. And you shouldn't be afraid of it. You can basically just ask it different things. Learn a little bit of prompt engineering. One of the easiest things you can do right now is to add like a sample of your writing and ask it to recreate something in that style to the prompt. Prompts can be really long, actually. A lot of people don't know this, but prompts can be actually really long. And if you give it a long enough prompt, it can recreate your style. It can recreate what you're trying to do. So that's kind of vital. And I just think, don't be afraid of it. Don't shut it out of your organization. And maybe not even admit that you're using it, because who cares? It's like saying, okay, well, we just moved from typewriters to Microsoft Word, so we have to tell all our clients so we don't use typewriters anymore. That's kind of silly. As long as the writing is still the same as it would have been if a human had done it, you're, for all intents and purposes, it's the exact same product.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to plug or talk about from your end?
Oh, just check out MediaCopilot.ai. We're trying to help newsrooms get better at this stuff. We offer trainings, we offer consulting, and it's really working well. And I think because Pete and I are both journalists, we have a very realistic attitude about how this stuff works. If we were technologists, I think we'd be a little bit more showy, but I don't think that's the case here. And I don't think that's, and this stuff is important. PR is important, marketing is important, writing is important, journalism is important. So it needs to be given the gravity that it deserves. And I think a lot of people are giving it this, hey, AI is going to destroy you, so let's just lay everybody off, which is an absolutely the worst idea in the world, because you've essentially destroyed an entire generation of journalists who say, well, there's no point in being here anymore. And people are going to remember, when you lay off hundreds of people from an organization, they're going to know that journalism is not a good job to be in, or PR is not a good job to be in. And that's super dangerous. It's very similar to the idea of like work from home, right? People work from home long enough and then they realized, hey, it was really, really bad to go in an office and sit in a cubicle all day and eat lunch at your desk and have somebody yell at you. The primary reason why people wanted you in the office was to yell at you closer. So anyway, talk to us about your needs and I'm sure we can help.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time today, John. Really appreciate it. Good luck with everything. I'm excited about what you're building at Media Copilot.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Take it easy. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you don't miss the next one. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Want to help others discover the Upgrade Pod? Please consider leaving a 5-star rating and sharing this episode with your friends and colleagues. You can see a full list of episodes on theupgrade.ai, where you can also learn about our AI training courses and consulting services. By the way, I'm always looking for new people to come on the show. Want to become my next guest? Have an idea for someone you'd like me to interview? Visit theupgrade.ai, where you can nominate yourself or others to come on the show. Special thanks this week to Levi Bridges for production help. Until next time, stay calm and keep upgrading.